From the Land Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report. It is the 6th day of June, 2014. I'm Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Mike Zuzulo at Global Commodity Analytics and Consulting. He's in Atchison, Kansas. And we'll take an in-depth look at PED, or porcine epidemic diarrhea virus. Yesterday, the United States Department of Agriculture announced it has plans to track and maybe contain the deadly disease of hogs. And we'll do that all during this Friday edition of the Closing Market Report.
Agricultural programming on WILL is made possible by Farm Credit Illinois, dedicated to improving the quality of life for Illinois farmers by offering financial products and services geared specifically to the farm community and developing partnership-based relationships with its agricultural customers.
Let's check now the numbers in the CME Group in Chicago, where futures finished the day mostly in the green. July soft red winter wheat at $6.18 and a quarter, up 12.5 cents for the day. September at $6.30 and a quarter, up 14. The hard red July at $7.09 and a quarter, up 18 and 3 quarters. Actually, that's the spring. The hard red July at $7.35 and a half, up 21 and a half cents. July corn futures at $4.59, a dime higher. September at $4.56 and a quarter, up 12 cents. And December at $4.57 and three quarters, 10 and a half cents higher. March corn at $4.67 and a quarter, up 10 and a half, and the May at $4.73 and three quarters, a dime higher. July futures of next year at $4.79 and a half, 9 and three quarters of a cent higher. July beans today at $14.57, down 3 and a half cents. It's really one of the few losers. August contract at $14 and a penny, up 3 quarters. November at $12.18 and three quarters, 8 and a quarter higher. January beans at $12.25, up 8 cents. And July of next year up 10 and a quarter, $12.35 and three quarters. Bean meal finished $3 lower at $4.487.60. Bean oil at $39.01. That was up 32. Live cattle futures for the day. The June contract $140.12 and a half cents, 62 and a half cents higher for the day. And the August futures were down 2 and a half cents at $141.30. August feeder cattle finished above $200 at $200.52 and a half cents, up 70. September futures at $200.87 and a half, up 62 and a half. And June lean hogs at $114.57 and a half cents, finished $1.60 higher. Of course, you're listening to the Closing Market Report. It does come to you from Illinois Public Media.
Leonard Seed Service supports agricultural programming on WILL as an additional service to its customers. Leonard Seed Service is an independent dealer providing DeKalb and Asgrow seed products to farmers throughout East Central Illinois via the Asgrow on-demand bulk soybean handling system. Leonard Seed Service, 217-497-2270.
Let's check the outside markets now at the CME Group in Chicago. Crude oil futures in the July at $102.74, up 26 cents. RBOB, or wholesale price of gasoline, at $2.94 and a tenth. That's a penny and 4 tenths lower. Ethanol futures at $2.15 and a half cents, up a nickel. And the RBOB to ethanol spread, 78 and 7 tenths of a cent wide. That's 6 and 4 tenths of a cent, though narrower than it was yesterday. Natural gas at $4.71 and 7 tenths of a cent, up a penny and 6 tenths. And diesel fuel for the day, that's just about 6 tenths of a cent lower, $2.87 and 3 tenths of a cent per gallon. Gold futures trading at $1,252.20 a troy ounce as it finished the afternoon. Settled down 80 cents in the U.S. dollar at 80.4, is down, or rather up, 0.03 on the afternoon. The weather forecast for the Urbana-Champaign area this afternoon shows that we are today outside right now at 80 degrees and headed this evening to a low tonight. Well, we don't see the low tonight. Let's see where that, there it is. We bring that back up tonight of 59 degrees on mostly clear skies. And then tomorrow, 20% chance of showers, a few thunderstorms. Those come after 1 o'clock in the afternoon tomorrow. Some increasing clouds, a high of 83 degrees on a south-southeast wind at 5 to 10 miles an hour. And then Saturday evening, showers, a few thunderstorms, mostly cloudy. Chance of rainfall for the evening set at 70% in the area with a low of 63 degrees and a 30% chance of showers and thunderstorms. Will continue into Sunday before 1 in the afternoon, otherwise mostly cloudy. A high of 77 degrees on a north-northeast wind. And then Sunday evening, mostly cloudy and 58 degrees. By the time we get to Monday, partly sunny skies and 77. Monday night, showers and thunderstorms, cloudy and 59. And Tuesday, it'll be mostly cloudy and 76 degrees. More on the weather at the bottom of the half hour. You, of course, are listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media on this Friday afternoon. It is the 6th day of June, 2014. Mike Zuzulo at Global Commodity Analytics and Consulting in Atchison, Kansas, joins us. Good afternoon to you, Michael.
Joins us on this D-Day 70th anniversary, Todd.
It is an important date in history, one where hundreds and thousands of men put their lives on the line to make sure that we could live the way we do today.
Amazing. Absolutely amazing.
Do you know anybody that managed to make it through Omaha Beach?
No, I did not ever get to meet anybody. My dad was in a pharmacist capacity and did troop trains from essentially New Orleans up to Chicago, and took care of wounded. And so when we talked about that and a couple of his buddies that came in on Mom and Dad's 50th wedding anniversary, actually one buddy and his wife, they talked about it a little bit. It was the first time in my life that I ever heard him talk about it. So not unlike, you know, what Tom Brokaw discussed.
Yeah, oftentimes nobody really wanted to talk about what happened. I went on the honor flight with my father a year ago in May. It was one of the most important things I've ever done in my life. It was truly amazing. And even then, they're pretty silent. I know one man, a farmer that was a neighbor, who was a POW in Germany, never, ever said anything about his experiences. Both my father and Jerry May are both still alive and with us, and really happy that they can be. I'm really, for all of those folks who serve us now and served us at World War II, we owe a great debt of gratitude.
And never be able to be repaid, that's for sure. Yeah, it's interesting because there was a fellow that I met through the family that he was Latvian, and he escaped from a Nazi prison camp, and he actually came over to the United States, and he was one of the main people that started making those yellow, golden Century 21 jackets. And what a fascinating guy, that rags to riches, you know, really typical story of how you can do anything once you go through something like that.
And one other note, and I've been to several World War II museums. Mike, I don't know whether you have or not. The one in New Orleans is really neat. I have been to one in Ypres, Belgium, extraordinary. The one in Kiev, Ukraine, probably is the saddest place I have ever been. They lost, I think, one in three men. Is that right? I'm pretty sure that's correct. They lost about 9 million during the war.
Wow.
In total. So the population was devastated, and their memorials are just heart-wrenching. And even the drive up to that particular museum, they bent the small trees so they looked like they were bowed in sorrow.
I'll be darned. That's interesting.
Yeah.
Wow. That's really something. I bet that will never leave your memory.
No. And that was years and years ago now. Like here in the United States, it had an imprint across the planet. It was an unbelievable event. Let's turn our attention, though, Mike, now on this 6th day of June, to what happened in Chicago at the CME Group. There are some numbers that are pretty extraordinary. In the corn pit, a dime higher for the nearby July. December futures back above 450. Actually, both of those above 450. And feeder cattle, they finished above $200 in several of the contracts. But I do want to get to one number that I found pretty interesting once I drew out the numbers and the weekly changes for Commodity Week. They posted an upside down in bean meal.
Yeah, I think you had a lot of spreading there. And, you know, one of the things that our colleague Ellen Dearden sent me a chart this morning of this Chinese soybean meal and how tough that market looks. And I think what's happening in China right now is you're seeing a lot of state reserves being released, and that's of soybeans, and that's allowing the domestic crusher to come in and get a cheaper bean price domestically and maybe take the pressure off the imports. Having said that, though, Todd, one of the big things that happened this week here in this country, and probably the reason for this meal oil shift in trend as far as the spreading, was that many crushers across the country from Ohio to Nebraska went from July to August in their bean processing bid, and that shook the market up for about 20 cents midweek, and that seemed to really cut the legs out from under the charts in meal and in beans. I think that's probably their trump card being played at this stage of the game, because what I'm still picking up is there's an extreme tightness in the meal. There's an extreme tightness in the beans. The actual exports this week were 7.8 million bushels. We only need 2.2 to meet USDA's target. The actual sales came in at 1.5 million bushels for old crop beans, current crop year beans. That's 3% above USDA's projection. So we keep on this track of 1 million, 1.5 million of exports going out and no imports coming in. You're back to like a 1.62, 1.63, maybe even a 1.64 type export number. So this is probably the most important feature to next Wednesday's report when it comes to the soybeans, is does July NOVE get reinvigorated from USDA's number?
And so you say they played their trump card. Does that mean they were just trying to hold her down and there's more upside left in that marketplace?
I really believe that, but I think from an economic standpoint, I think they've got to realize that that discourages the imports, it discourages the farmers from letting go what little he may have left, and it really encourages the export market to stay very competitive with the world markets. And I think we're probably, around 75% sold in Brazilian beans at this stage. So that last 20-25% of beans are probably going to be held onto pretty tightly unless our prices climb.
Why is it that wheat futures jumped so sharply today?
I think the biggest thing was we were just overdone, overdone given the harvest data that we're getting out of Texas and Oklahoma. We've been getting harvest data for almost 2 weeks now. 7 bushels, 10 bushels, 15 bushels on hard red wheat, not uncommon, actually very common and kind of the trend right now, and a lot of people reporting that they've already filed claims and have been zeroed out. So then comes this weekend rain forecast for Oklahoma and the Texas Panhandle, right where they're wanting to harvest, and you're looking at 4 to 6 inches of rain if the GFS or the North American or the European models are correct. And all three of them agree that it's going to be some really heavy rain right in that area. If that's the case, you're going to lose a lot, and you're going to see a lot of quality go by the wayside if that kind of rain comes in. So you notice hard red wheat put the bottom in first on Wednesday. All these lows from this week, Todd, I think are extremely important, whether you're talking Dease corn, NOVE beans, July wheat, hard red wheat, it doesn't matter. I think they're extremely important after the report comes out on Wednesday. You hold those lows, you're in good shape technically and I think fundamentally, and you probably have a seasonal cycle low in place. But if you take those lows out after the report, you got to look at it at face value, in my view.
Corn just overdone as well and bounced, and will it consolidate or?
Partially. What? I think partially was led by the wheat, but then the second half of the day, we got an interesting news wire that the U.S. EPA is going to extend their compliance deadline for the 2013 biofuel mandate all the way to September. And I guess, this is a stretch, but I'm guessing that the EPA is punting on the mandate until they get closer to the midterm elections. But I think the market saw it that way, at least. And we saw August ethanol jump very quickly after that news wire was released, August ethanol ending up 2.5%. So wheat came in, underpinned us, put our low in for us, and then we got this ethanol news. And I think shorts really ran for the doors at that point.
And then one other number that I think jumps out at me, this one in the hogs, July futures on the weekly, it posted an outside up week too.
You can't ignore the hog market right now because I think it's playing catch up with the beef market, and the fund selling that went on in May and the first couple days of June were immense. I mean, we really cleaned house there, and I think you're getting back to the beef, pork, summer grilling fundamentals that we talked about this morning. You know, one of the things that really hit me hard this week was this European Central Bank coming in and moving towards quantitative easing. They haven't done it yet, but they're taking their interest rates down to zero and saying that they will quantitative ease if they need to. I think the gold market and the dollar market really expected that and predicted that and forecasted that very well and anticipated it. Now that's out of the way, we might see commodity bulls in a general mindset start to walk back in from a standpoint of the investor class, because you're making all-time highs in the S&P and you're probably running out of news to feed the bull in the equities. And so I think you're probably trying to get to that point where if you're an investor class, you're probably looking for a place to put your money, and some of these commodities may be the place to do it, especially if the Fed continues to tighten.
Thanks for taking the time. Have a great weekend.
Have a great weekend, sir.
Mm-hmm. That is Mike Zuzulo. He's a global commodity analytics and marketing. Joins us on this Friday afternoon edition of the Closing Market Report. Don't forget to stay with us if you can on our home radio station or listen to us at willag.org after about 4 o'clock this afternoon. For Commodity Week, our panelists today will include Sherm Newlin out of Risk Management Commodities, Jackie Banks of Stewart Peterson, Dan Zwicker of CGB Enterprises, and special guest, Alan Brugler of Brugler Marketing and Management.
Support for agricultural programs comes from AgriGold and their newest AgriGold Giant 107-day A6408, available for 2014 in Roundup Ready and also VT Triple Pro Rib. More information on A6408, including yield and dry down data, is at AgriGold.com.
The Closing Market Report is a production of Illinois Public Media. It's public radio for the farming world from the University of Illinois. Now, up next, you know, traders in Chicago have a better handle on a disease in the nation's hog herd. I'll have more on why the price of pork is on the decline. A year ago, a new disease arrived in the United States. PEDV, or porcine epidemic diarrhea virus, was expected to kill about 10% of the baby pigs it infected. This number's correct. A hog herd infected by PEDV can expect a 10% death loss. The disease kills all the baby pigs born in a 4 to 5 week period after the first infection. And there's not a thing a farmer can do to stop it. Well, after that first infection, those numbers can get better, but death loss will still occur, say clinical veterinarians. This is just coming into the understanding of the trade, and so is a better handle on the spread of PEDV in the U.S. Purdue Extension Ag economist Chris Hurt says speculators who drove the hog futures in Chicago to new highs in the last year are now liquidating those positions as the impact has come into focus.
Now markets have a better understanding that while PED virus certainly did its damage, death loss may have been over-anticipated in February and March, and producers have been able to compensate for a substantial portion of the lost animals by much higher weights.
There are still critical questions surrounding the disease that have to be answered, cautions Hurt. Things like, what were baby pig death losses from January through March that will determine July through September slaughter supplies? And will the impacts of PEDV or related viruses return next winter? Well, as it turns out, says the Purdue Extension Ag economist, the March hogs and pigs inventory count from USDA provided some reasonable estimates of the impact of death loss from PEDV.
USDA's inventory of pigs weighing 50 pounds and more that would have formed the bulk of the March, April, May supplies, they reported them down 3.6%, and the actual slaughter for these past 3 months has been down about 5.5%.
Producers are compensating for the smaller head count with sharp increases in market weights. In January and February, weights were up about 2% above the average in the previous year. That is to say, once hog prices soared to record highs in February and March, producers reacted by increasing weights. In the month of May, live weights reached 4.7% above the weights in May a year earlier. Clearly, weights are substantially compensating for lower animal numbers, says Hurt.
For this year to date, the total number of hogs coming to market has been down 4%, but weights have been up 3%, meaning that the total supply of pork has only been down a modest 1% compared to the first 5 months of a year ago. The biggest declines in hog numbers so far this year were in the months of March, when we were down 7% on hog numbers, and in April, when slaughter was down 5%.
Well, slaughter numbers were down 4% in May. While there's always some questioning of USDA counts, the reasonable accuracy of the March report provides some added confidence in their numbers headed into the summer. That report suggests the number of pigs available for market in June, July, and August will be down about 4%. Assuming weights continue to be 3 to 4% higher, this implies pork supplies for the summer will be unchanged to down 1% relative to last summer. Such prospects are hardly a ringing endorsement for the super high prices of hogs. Speaking of which, the U.S. Meat Federation reports beef and pork exports continued their positive growth in April, and that would be a way to increase the price of both products. The April total pork exports rose 11% over a year ago volumes. Value levels rose 26% for pork exports. Now let's turn our attention directly to PEDV, or porcine epidemic diarrhea virus. Ag Secretary Tom Vilsack for the United States Department of Agriculture spoke to a packed room during the World Pork Expo yesterday. That's when he announced a new PEDV program, which includes mandatory reporting of the disease.
Which will require producers, should they be impacted and affected by an infection, to notify us of that fact, and then to take the additional step of notifying their veterinarian or the state veterinarian or the veterinarians associated with our department at USDA, APHIS, so that we can work collaboratively with you to develop a management plan that will allow us better to monitor, trace, and control the circumstance on the farm.
The Ag Secretary stressed this does not involve a restriction of movement or quarantine.
It does involve the need for reporting and the need for a monitoring plan and a management plan. Now, we understand and appreciate that when such a requirement is created, it places the onus financially on producers. And we also know that the pork producers have themselves advanced significant resources in order to identify a pathway of these viruses in order to identify vaccines that may potentially work to eliminate or eradicate the virus.
He said it's important the USDA be helping more than just in word.
What we're asking for in our 2015 budget will approximate roughly $30 million. Initially, what will be available to producers and to the industry will be a little bit less than $4 million, which will go to additional research for the development of a vaccine. Several million dollars will be directed to state departments of agriculture through cooperative agreements to allow them to work collaboratively with you and us on these management and control activities. A little over $500,000 will be made available for developing these herd management plans that will be required by those who are impacted and affected by these viruses. Over $11 million will be made available in the form of a cost-share opportunity for additional expenses that producers will incur as a result of the biosecurity measures that they will be required to take under their plan.
Well, as for a vaccine, even on a fast-track approval from the FDA, there could be a six-month wait. Vilsack said he will push hard to get it through.
Once we have a vaccine, we'll do everything we possibly can to make sure it gets in the field as quickly as we can. I'm not sure that we're at that point yet. But we will make sure that once we are sure that we've got the answer, we'll obviously get it to folks as quickly as we can. You've got to make sure you've got the answer. You've got to make sure that you understand what unintended consequences may result from the utilization of some particular vaccine. But we will do everything we can to move this thing quickly.
That's USDA Secretary of Agriculture Tom Vilsack. He says he's putting his agency's resources to work for an industry that's way too important to America and to the producers of rural America, not to take aggressive action.
This stock and commodity report is made possible with support from Bates Commodities in Normal. Bates Commodities can be reached at 1-800-383-4647 or on the internet at batescom.net.
Well, I give Ben Pruce a call at the Andersons in Everly, Iowa. I actually texted him. He texted back, said he's on the golf course at the moment, and said to tell you this. The December corn's lost 50 cents in 20 days, and you've still not done anything. He's going to go and enjoy the sun. Back in just 2 minutes with the weather forecast.
It's National Applesauce Cake Day. The first references to applesauce appeared in late 14th century Europe. On this day in agricultural history in 1882, Henry Seeley of New York City received the first American patent for an electric iron. He called this device the electric flat iron. It used a carbon arc to create heat but it was not all that safe. A decade later, hand irons using electrical resistance were introduced by Crompton and Company. In 1899, James Ricks patented a rubber overshoe for horses. The patent says the shoe prevents a horse from slipping in sleety weather and is applied over the horseshoe in common use. The shoe was formed from rubber and canvas and was fastened to the hoof by a strap. And in 1932, the Revenue Act created the first gasoline tax in the U.S., 1 cent per gallon of gas. The 1 cent rate was maintained till just before the U.S. entered World War II, when, as a result of increased national defense requirements, the tax was increased. Prior to the 1932 Act, there had been reluctance on the part of federal officials and Congress to impose the tax at the federal level. Instead, they preferred to relinquish the revenue source to the states to help them finance their revenue needs. By the way, Oregon was the first state to levy a gasoline tax in 1919. And that's this day in agricultural history.
Support for agricultural programs comes from AgriGold and their newest AgriGold Giant 107-day A6408, available for 2014 in Roundup Ready and also VT Triple Pro Rib. More information on A6408, including yield and dry down data, is at AgriGold.com.
This agricultural programming comes to you from Illinois Public Media. It's public radio for the farming world. You can find us online at willag.org. That's willag.org. Now here's Jim Angel from the Illinois State Water Survey, the Prairie Research Institute, with an update of the weekend weather forecast.
June is starting out much warmer and wetter than average. The statewide average temperature for June is 73 degrees, 5 degrees above average. The statewide average rainfall is 1.4 inches, which is about double for this period. The wettest area of the state was in western Illinois around Quincy, where rainfall amounts were in the order of 1.5 inches to 3 inches in total. Until now, that was one of the driest areas of the state. Rainfall totals for June elsewhere were about an inch or less, especially in parts of northeast Illinois and east of St. Louis. The National Weather Service forecast indicates that there is a 70% chance of El Nino arriving this summer, and the odds increase to 80% by this fall. El Nino refers to a set of weather and ocean patterns in the Pacific Ocean that can influence the Midwest. However, even if El Nino arrives this summer, it takes a few weeks for our weather patterns to change. The National Weather Service indicates that another wet week is in store for Illinois. A low-pressure system will move across southern Illinois on Saturday and Sunday, bringing widespread rain and thunderstorms across the state. The heaviest amounts are expected to be south of Interstate 70. Temperatures over the next week will be near average, with highs in the 70s and lows in the 50s and 60s. This is Jim Angel, state climatologist at the Illinois State Water Survey.
Our thanks to Jim Angel at the Illinois State Water Survey, the Prairie Research Institute, for his update of the weather forecast. Here are the way the numbers settled in Chicago from the CME Group on the weekly trade. This is the Friday-to-Friday change. The high for the week at $4.70.5 in the July corn, the low at $4.47. A settlement price at $4.59, down 6 3/4 Friday to Friday. December at $4.57 3/4 in the corn pit. The new crop finished 0.25 cent higher this week than it did last. July soybeans atop at $15.11 3/4 cent. Bottom for the week at $14.56. Settled 36 1/4 cents lower on the week at $14.57. November beans at $12.18 3/4 were down 15. July in the bean meal posted an outside down week that might be important to note at $487.60, off $12.60. July bean oil at $39.01, up 51 cents. Wheat futures finished the July contract with the top on the week at $6.26 3/4 in the soft red, the low at $6.03. Settlement price 9 cents lower at $6.18 1/4. And July hard red winter wheat up 2 cents for the week at $7.08 1/2. August live cattle futures from the CME finished at $141.30, up $2.70. August feeder cattle topped $200 and finished there at $200.52 1/2, up $3.47 1/2 for the week. And July lean hogs this week posted an outside up week at $124.97, $4.50 higher than last week.